I use this with players who are worth 50, 60 million pounds, dollars, whatever you want to call it, in transfer value. And I'll give you one from one of the best players in the world right now who I'm working with. Okay, this player is a defender. And this player, every single game, this player's main objective is this. I'm going to be dominant and relentless. I'm going to be dominant and relentless nonstop. Nothing and no one takes me away from dominant and relentless. Every run, every movement, every action, dominant and relentless. If my cross goes into Rosie, dominant, relentless. If I miss a chance to score, dominant, relentless. If we go a goal down, I'm going to stay dominant, relentless. If we go a goal up, dominant, relentless. If I'm losing my duels, my 1v1s, dominant, relentless. If my teammates are playing poorly, dominant, relentless. If the crowd are getting on my back, dominant, relentless. Every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, going into a weekend game, this is what this person is rehearsing in their mind. This is the narrative that they're creating. Okay, it's a technique I call a game face. A game face is your competitive persona. It's an attitudinal guide. It's a behavioral blueprint.
Almost an alter ego, in a sense.
Kind of. It's your optimal mental state. It's a little bit like the late, great Kobe Bryant's Mamba mentality, but it's more powerful because it's personalized.
All right, we're back here again at the United Soccer Coaches Convention in Philadelphia. And, man, we've had pretty much all legends on the show today, and it got another one right here.
Someone that's
really built a strong personal brand, and quite surprised that we were able to get you on the show, but I'm really excited to have this conversation. Dan Abrahams, nice to meet you.
Honored and delighted to be here. Sean,
yeah.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Now, so you also do a podcast. It's called The Sports Psych Show.
Yes.
How long have you been doing that?
So I've been doing it for just over 3 years now, and I love it. I'm a distinctly average host. I just have great guests.
Same.
So we can enjoy being the average hosts together then, although I'm the guest this time, so I'll have to be half decent if you guys are average. I've been doing that, and it's really a deep dive into the world of sports psychology. I kind of have a mix of people on. Actually, it's kind of grown into predominantly being academics from the world of sports psychology and sports coaching. So it is a deep dive, I must be honest. And, we go deep.
Yeah.
But I think there's kind of a space for that. And we try to demystify things and make it as practical as we possibly can, not too theoretical. So that's the Sports Psych Show.
I've heard Dan through you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I definitely love the stuff that he showed me for sure. I mean, it's such an important area in sport that I feel like a lot of people don't really think about. Obviously, at such like at a young level and a youth level, people don't think about it as much. Once you get into the professional level, it's obviously just as important as everything else. So I definitely am excited for the conversation.
Yeah. So what is your background in sports? Yeah. Do you have a soccer background?
Only a supporter. So I grew up.
So who do you support?
I now support whoever pays me.
Yeah. So there you go.
That's how merceless I've become.
There you go.
Love that.
But I grew up a Spurs supporter, which at my age, I'm in my mid 40s, so I grew up sort of the late parts of the 80s and the 90s, which was pretty painful supporting Tottenham Hotspur at that time. They've vastly improved over the years. So, I was actually a professional golfer.
Okay. Oh, cool.
I didn't win any money. I was quite a hopeless professional golfer in many respects. And that was largely not through a complete lack of ability or talent, but largely because of what was going on between my two ears. All the things you think about from a psych perspective, I wasn't particularly good at. I didn't know how to concentrate effectively, build my confidence, self-belief. Didn't know how to practice effectively. Didn't know what to be thinking on a day-to-day basis. And so that led me on a kind of a journey. I was a bit of a sad teenager. I was reading sports psychology books. You're not supposed to be nodding there, Sean. Yeah, you were a sad teenager. I was kind of reading books about sports psychology at that time. And then, obviously, that interest accelerated as I was playing golf. Saw a couple of sports psychologists, had mixed experiences with that. And then as I became a golf coach, and I decided to go to university at that time. So what in UK we would call a mature student. I don't know if I was particularly mature, but I was an older student, if you like, in my mid-20s. And I did a degree in psychology, a master's in sports psychology. And I left and became a registered and qualified sports psychologist in the UK. And I kind of, I, it's funny, as a sports psychologist, you can work across all sports, and I have worked across all sports. But when I was a golfer, when I used to listen to sports psychologists speak about golf, there was always some things they would say that were like, "Oh, I'm not." It sounds like you don't really know my landscape very well. You don't know my language. You don't necessarily know the specific challenges that I face. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, and there's definitely sports I work in where the first thing I'd say to the athlete or the coach is, I'm not an expert of your sport. But it led me to think, you know what, I want to work across all sports, but I know golf right at the back of my hand, so I'm going to specialise in golf, but I also want to specialise in another sport. Big football supporter, soccer supporter. So I started to get involved about 17 years ago in non-league football in the UK, because I worked for free. I wanted to learn the language of the game. I wanted to learn the specific challenges that players face. And it kind of built from there, and then I got introduced to a few Premier League players and started to work at West Ham, and then built from there and snowballed and wrote a few books, and they were fortunate enough to be best-selling, and very kind of Gareth Bale last year to come out and say Soccer Tough, my first book, changed his life. I don't think it changed his life, but that's what he said, so I'm going to go with that. But, you know, it's kind of snowballed, and that's where I find myself now, working globally in football, in performance psychology. So that's where we're at.
Nice, cool.
Wow.
I know, it's, yeah. Because it's funny you say golf, because when I think of, like, a mental toughness, like, in a sport, that's the first one that comes to my mind.
Right. Yeah, okay. You're battling yourself.
Yeah, and I'm starting to play a little bit more, and every single shot's a battle.
Well, you see, you are right. I do think there's an interesting, I always challenge this slightly, in as much as, I mean, number one, we don't want to get into the specifics of golf, but it's more of a technical game than people actually realize.
Oh, for sure.
You know, you can think well, but still not return the club head to the ball particularly consistently. Let's not venture too much down the golf path, but the interesting thing is actually a lot of footballers will say that, but actually my response is always, well, don't underestimate the mental challenges of football, soccer, because, you know, there's a few things to understand there. First and foremost, it's a team game. And so subsequently, there's a lot out of your control. Like, as a pro golfer, I would qualify for certain tours, pay my entrance fee, rock up, and I could play. How many sessions do I do back in England with players, or, you know, on Zoom with American players who said, Dan, I'm not being chosen right now. The manager or the head coach doesn't like me, doesn't like the cut of my jib, as we'd say in England. And so subsequently they don't get picked. Well, that's actually can be quite psychologically traumatic. So there's that. The other thing to consider is, as there is a team game, there's a lot of interpersonal skills. Golf, I could be the rudest, harshest, and most antisocial person there is out there, and I can get on with my career. You can't really do that in a team environment. You can try and do that, and I'm sure there are many players, and I've known many players who are a little bit that way inclined, but it makes it tougher. And to be a great teammate, to be a great leader, to have great relationships is absolutely imperative. And that all comes under the psychological component. The next thing to say is that there's, you know, if we take golf, it's a self-paced sport, it's an individual sport, and it's a slow-paced sport. And so it's understandable that people would say, well, there's a lot of time to think, and so subsequently it's psychological. Now, actually, when it comes to soccer, if we think about soccer works in seconds, it's a quick sport. But the thing is there's something working quicker than soccer every single time, and that is your brain and your nervous system. Your brain and your nervous system function in milliseconds. Your brain and the nervous system throw up thoughts and feelings and emotions and sensations all the time. You know, and we are, as human beings, are designed to judge what's going on around us. How am I playing? Am I playing well? What threats are out there? What rewards out there? I'm 1-0 up. That is awesome, which can take us out at the moment. I'm 1-0 down. That's terrible. I'm playing awful. This isn't going well. Wow, this is a big, quick, strong striker. This person's getting in front of me all the time, right? You know, all those kinds of what I call ants. ANTs being an acronym for automatic negative thoughts. So we want players who are capable of squashing their ants, turning down a volume of ants. We want them to be able to play in a high-performance mindset and start and stay there no matter what. And I think you know, you're right there, Evan. I think as young players, something you mentioned earlier, young players don't necessarily take the mental side seriously enough. You know, and look, there is an element here of they're playing, they're having fun, and that I wouldn't want to take that away from them at all. But if you're serious about the game, then you've really got to explore, you know, your capacity to take charge of yourself, engage in self-control, be in your high-performance mindset no matter what, be able to shift up from your low, LPM, your low-performance mindset no matter what. Those are all a small snapshot of the kind of the mini skills that I talk about with players and teams on a day-to-day basis. So it is still a very psychological sport.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So I coach at the U17 level,
yes,
very high-level group.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think they're starting to get to the age now where they're actually starting to become more aware,
yep,
of their mindset.
Yes.
And so that's something that I talk about with them a lot, and it's I tell them it's a matter of like training your mind the same way you train your body, right?
Yep. Yes.
So what are some practical things that, yeah, players can do to actually train their mind to have less of those negative thoughts as they're performing?
Well, Sean, you're talking to the right person, because I've based my career on the last 17 years of coaching and said, I know this is important.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily know how to do it.
Right.
And, you know, it must be said, the reality is when players are training, when they're doing their keep balls, their small-sided games, their rondos, their 11v11s, all the stuff that you know more about than I do, you're still training them mentally to a degree, because psychology is happening out there every single second. But my argument is, let's train them mentally on purpose. Let's do it deliberately. And so subsequently, you need techniques, tools for your toolbox, your coaching toolbox, in order to help players do this. Now, so there's a whole raft of techniques stuffed into my book, Soccer Tough, Soccer Tough 2, Soccer Brain, that are available on Amazon.
There you go.
And yeah, there you go. I might plug that now.
We'll link it. We'll link it
in the next 5 minutes. So let me give you a technique I use. For me, 8-year-olds can use this. 14-year-olds can use this. 18-year-olds can use this. I use this with players who are worth $50-60 million, dollars, whatever you want to call it, in transfer value.
Yeah.
And I'll give you one. From one of the best players in the world right now who I'm working with. Okay, this player is a defender. And this player, every single game, this player's main objective is this. I'm going to be dominant and relentless. I'm going to be dominant and relentless nonstop. Nothing and no one takes me away from dominant and relentless. Every run, every movement, every action, dominant and relentless. If my cross goes into Rosie, dominant, relentless. If I miss a chance to score, dominant, relentless. If we go a goal down, I'm going to stay dominant, relentless. If we go a goal up, dominant, relentless. If I'm losing my duels, my 1v1s, dominant, relentless. If my teammates are playing poorly, dominant, relentless. If the crowd are getting on my back, dominant, relentless. So every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, going into a weekend game, this is what this person is rehearsing in their mind. This is the narrative that they're creating. Okay. It's a technique I call a game face. A game face. A game face is your competitive persona. Okay. Mm. It's an attitudinal guide. It's a behavioral blueprint.
Almost
it's
an alter ego in
a
sense.
Kind of. It's your optimal mental state. It's a little bit like the late great Kobe Bryant's Mamba mentality, yeah, but it's more powerful because it's personalized. Let's hone in on what I'm saying there. Dominant and relentless. Now, this was the specific game face that this player chose. Now, how that starts is I have three other tools in my toolbox that drive a game face, and that's memory, imagination, and perception. Memory, imagination, perception. These, as coaches, these are really important tools that you can use. Tapping into players' memories, imaginations, and perceptions. So memory, tell me about you at your best. Tell me about you at your best. A best game. Pick a best game. Talk to me about that. Imagination, tell me about a dream game. Tell me about a dream game, a 10 out of 10 game. Hey, go crazy with your imagination, an 11 out of 10 game. Perception, who do you want to be out there? How do you want to go about your game out there? Memory, imagination, perception. From there, what I do is I put a slide in front of players, and I'll say, here is a bunch of words. Now, these words are adjectives. Adjectives, if you talk to a cognitive linguist, that's a very complex term for somebody who just is passionate and studies language. Language is really important. It's important to you, me as a psychologist. It's important to you as a coach. Now, you talk to one of these people, they'll say an adjective influences behaviors. It changes behaviors. When I'm thinking of an adjective that could be important for football, I'm talking about dominant, relentless, upbeat, lively, alert, alive, sharp, relaxed, focused, calm. Words, kind of action-based words that drive behaviors, that influence behaviors, that mediate behaviors. So I'm putting a whole bunch of words up. This player picks dominant, relentless. He said, "Damn, when I'm at my best, I'm dominant. I'm dominant in the air. I'm dominant in a challenge. I've got dominant body language." So it's kind of embodied. The beauty of adjectives, if you can embody them and enact them and embed them. That's important. Embody them, enact them, embed them, be them, do them, act them. Be them, do them, act them. So this player, when he goes out, he goes and he plays dominant, relentless, dominant, relentless. He says them, he aims to be them, do them, act them. Be them, do them, act them. Help players pick action-based words, adjectives, that they can embody and enact on a pitch. And how this works from a coaching perspective is you can get them, you by the side of the pitch, you could be saying, "Hey, come on, I want to see your game face. I want to see those action-based words. Show me those action-based words. Show me, show me, show me, show me." So you're training them mentally as you're training them technically, tactically, physically. And you can have so much fun with game faces because you can extend them onto, you can use model players, you can use animals and things like that. So, for instance, a player that you might have heard of, Callum Wilson, Newcastle striker. I worked with him when I worked with Bournemouth. And he has a game face of confident, relentless tiger. No, I lie. Confident, relentless lion. Wrong animal.
And he chose those.
He chose those. And he loved... When you ask for an animal, it always gets a bit of a laugh from players because it's a little bit embarrassing to the kind of thing. But there's a serious side to that. It's a metaphor. Our brains work metaphorically. 70% of our language is metaphorical. Okay.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So when he's thinking, here's what a game face does, guys. If you think about it for yourself, it fires your brain in certain patterns that enables you to stay more consistent. Who am I going to be on game day? I'm going to be confident, relentless lion. Confident, relentless lion nonstop. I'm like a lion in that penalty area. If I haven't scored after 80 minutes, I'm going to stay being a lion. Or you can have a model player, for example. So another person I can mention, most of my work is confidential, but another player I can mention is Yannick Bolasie, the former Crystal Palace Everton.
What a player,
Brave, lively, relentless Ronaldo. Brave, lively, relentless Ronaldo.
Definitely lively, for sure. Yeah.
Right, and that's his most important word.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's a great story. I'm rambling on. Is this okay?
There's a great
story from when first season I worked with him. My job, Crystal Palace had just been promoted about 6 years ago to the Premier League. Playing for Crystal Palace, it was help Yannick feel like a Premier League player. We created this game face, brave, lively, relentless Ronaldo. And it came to one of the final games of the season. Okay, he was playing Liverpool. This was when Brendan Rodgers was manager. This was when they were on the cusp of winning the Premier League title, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And Liverpool came to Selhurst Park, the home of Crystal Palace. And Yannick and I had spoken, and what we knew in that first season, Crystal Palace being the underdogs in most games, he, as a winger, wasn't going to see much of the ball.
Yeah, so, but when you get on it.
Yeah, he wasn't going to get on the ball. He wasn't going to affect the game. Mm-hmm. And that's when he tended to have automatic negative thoughts, ANTS, automatic negative thoughts, feelings and emotions. He had to squash his ants quickly, and we spoke about it. We said, look, you're going to have ants tonight. You're going to have ants because you're not going to get on the ball. You're going to think the manager's going to want to bring you off, Tony Pulis. He's going to want to bring you off. You know, you're going to have those ants, but you've got to keep talking to yourself. You've got to keep talking. Remind yourself to be lively, lively, lively. Embody brave, lively, relentless Ronaldo, BLR Ronaldo, but especially that word lively. Here's what happened. Liverpool went 3-0 up. It's like, it's over, man. It's over. They're 3-0 up. 75th minute. Yannick is talking to himself. He's talking to himself. He's talking to himself. He's saying, telling himself lively. He's squashing his ants. He's squashing his ants. Ball breaks up to him from a corner kick. He carries it up the pitch, delivers it into the area. Dwight Gale's there. Bang, 3-1. They go
3-2. Oh, I remember this game.
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
A few minutes later, I believe Yannick carried it up the end of the end, bang in a penalty area, bang, it's a goal, 3-3. The following week, if you remember that infamous game against Chelsea, and Steven Gerrard slipped, if you
yes,
remember.
Yes,
and that,
yeah.
So that was the start of killing Liverpool's title. That was in wow. part Yannick Bolasie's
love that
game
man.
Face.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. And that was that. So you've got to stay in the game. And it doesn't matter how quick the game is. Players are going to think out there. They're going to have ants, so they've got to squash their ants.
Yeah, for sure. No, and that makes so much sense because... Especially in a sense of, like, a winger, I feel like. I mean, obviously, every position, whether it's a defender or which one, kind of makes the most sense. But, like, my favorite team's United. And yep. so I look at, like Marcus Rashford, who's a man on fire right now. But he I is. Think that's something that he struggled with last season.
Yeah.
Maybe he had other stuff on his mind with all the, like, all the charity stuff and kind of stuff like that. But I could definitely see him as a player who is having ants. Because he's a person that when he gets the ball, I'm sure some of those words that Bolasie uses are the same for him.
Yep.
And it's just like, hey, if I don't beat my man the first time, I need to just get that out of my mind. Yeah. And just do it again.
Yeah.
Well, and just do it again.
You see, absolutely. I mean, the interesting thing, hey, hot off the press here. I was reading a story this morning. I don't know Marcus. And I think the interesting thing about having external distractions,
yeah.
I actually think that can be very healthy.
Yeah.
However, that they can sometimes get in the way. But hot off the press, I was reading an article this morning about some of the things that he'd done over the summer. He'd come over to the States. He was training. I think it was over in Seattle for a little bit. And he started to work on some what we might call marginal gains. They did some video analysis. They noticed he was starting some sprints from his back foot. So he lost about 0.1, 0.2 seconds. There was some other stuff he did. Now, here's the thing, and this is where a lot of coaches get this wrong. They silo psychology away and they think, oh, you know, we need to know more about psychology. How do we work on this? But don't forget, when you work technically, tactically, physically, you're also working psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
So when you've got a Marcus Rashford who's working on his technique, who's working on his sprinting technique, so he starts on more on his toes, on his front foot, yeah. so he's a little bit quicker to anticipate, make decisions and so on, that makes a difference to his focus of attention. It makes a difference to his confidence, his self-belief, his capacity to take control of himself. So it all interacts and works together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. It really does. It's all connected.
Yeah.
And I think that's only something that athletes in general are just starting to recognize,
yeah.
you know? And,
yeah.
and of course, you're talking about players that are worth millions and millions of pounds, right? So they have the resources to find someone like you
yeah.
that can really help them.
Yeah.
How can players that aren't at that level yet still get that same value for themselves?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like books, other resources, yeah. like what can they do?
Well, what a wonderful question, Sean, because clearly I would direct them to Soccer Tough.
Yeah.
I mean,
shout out.
Gareth Bale said Soccer Tough was a book that changed his life. So who am I to argue with Gareth Bale?
What a player.
And I've had lots of players who contacted me and said, thanks to Soccer Tough, because I really wanted, please excuse this bit of self-publication. I did publish.
I guess it's where like self-help.
It's been a long word, a long day, and that was a long word. So I wanted to write a book that really brought this alive. I wanted to write a book that I got permission. I got permission from Carlton Cole, if you remember him, and my work with him at West Ham. He went from reserve team at West Ham to playing for England. And I'm like the 1-5 guy, 1% to 5%. I was a small part of that process, yeah. but he very kindly talked a little bit about it. And he had a game phrase of aggressive beast, aggressive beast, aggressive yeah. beast. So, you know, I would say to players, seek out every young person who uses social media. Yeah. Seek out people who are influencing positively on social media.
It's a big
seek
thing.
Seek out books. I can only speak for my work and my book, Soccer Tough, Soccer Tough 2. I have an online academy, the Dan Abraham Soccer Academy, where it has basic, fun, animated videos. You really want to find things that bring this to life and things you can practically do. But look, what I'd say is for everybody out there, when you go and train proactively. Have a couple of goals in mind for your game. Don't just rely on your coaches to deliver what they want you to deliver on. Pick a couple of objectives, one or two objectives that you want to improve upon in your game, and purposefully and proactively work on those things. I would say to everybody out there, you know, the wonderful thing, again, let's come back to language and let's think of psychological terms. Concentration, confidence, as an example. If I was standing on the side of the pitch and I said to you, show me a confident pass, show me a confident move, show me a confident run, come on, confident, 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 that in and of itself is a form of mental training. You can do that for your players as coaches. I want you to do this rondo here in the style of the most confident player in the world. And just, hey, that's fun, and just go and do it. I would say to players out there, just set an objective for yourself to embody confidence and practice that. And if you misplace a few passes, if you make some mistakes, whatever happens out there, keep being, doing, and acting confident. So it's a little bit like that game face technique, but it's just using action-based words. Practice that, and you will notice a big difference. You've got to stay proactive. You've got to stay on top of that intensity out there with those words. You do that, and you will become a better player.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that it really is, like, you've given some very good, solid, like, practical tips here. And even going back to, like, the social media thing, like, it's really just as simple as that, right? Because especially for players, teenagers, right? They're so influenced by social media. And whatever they follow or whatever they look at a lot on their feed is going to be circulating in their brain all the time. So it's like just as simple as instead of following, like, some rapper or something, like, you know.
I can do rapping. I can rap.
I'm a big rapper.
I'm sorry. I'm a positive rapper, at least.
I get what you're saying.
Follow an account that's going to feed you something and put something into your brain that's actually going to benefit you.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you said, with the coaching side, you are doing mental training without even realizing it, almost.
Mm-hmm. You are. Be proactive with it. And as you say, it's if you can find people on social media, it's going to make, if you're passionate about the game and you're passionate about improving and you want to improve, it's an area that you can discover. And look, there's always going to be things that you don't necessarily warm to. You know, a lot of psychs will talk about mindfulness and meditation, and that might be something that interests you and you're curious about and you feel might help you. Equally, you might think that's not for me. I like to be more practical. Hey, there's so many different tools and techniques, and there's something for everybody out there. So be curious, man. Be curious. Don't be closed-minded. Be curious. Be open. Strive to try things. And, get out there and do it.
Yeah. I would say this question is probably going to be obvious because I think you're going to just tell me everyone should, or, like, at every level. But I guess, is there do you think most people just really focus on sports psychology and fixing it when things are down as opposed to when things are, like, positive?
Good question.
And I feel like it should almost be, like,
good question.
Yeah, like, when things are, you know, I feel like when you're at, like, your top, that's when you should really try and get in there. And so, I mean, I guess that's probably one thing. Is that something that you do as well? Like, you'll have players who are like, in really good form, who are doing all these things mentally, and they still come to you as just a way to keep sharpening themselves?
To learn new things, stay on top of it. It's an interesting dynamic. I'll answer this in several ways. In psychology, ethically, we are bound to try to, what we don't want is for a player, a human being, to be reliant on us. That's considered to be unethical. And at no stage would I want a player to, you know, have to pay me all the time to work with them and be bound by my voice and my ideas. However, there's an interesting juxtaposition there. Okay, and that's a good word, eh? Juxtaposition. It's an interesting juxtaposition in as much as I respect and appreciate that, and my peers, my contemporaries in psychology will say that, and I believe in that. And I'm hopefully very ethical in my psychological practice. But equally, we are performance coaches. And look, I'm in my mid-40s, as I mentioned earlier, and I'm not an unfit and unhealthy person. I'm reasonably fit and reasonably healthy, but you know what? I don't have a six-pack. Now, yes, that becomes more difficult when you're in your 40s. But the reason I'm saying this is because I like to think that if I had an S&C, a strength and conditioning coach, or, you know, any kind of coach with me all the time, and driving me, I would have far more chance of getting closer to having a six pack. But I don't. And so I need somebody there. I probably need somebody there to help me be more disciplined, to give me ideas, to give me advice, to push me through, to help me stay on top of it. And so I think it's vital. It can be seen as vital for some players, some of the time, to have a voice there all the time. And so I do that with some players. As long as they know they can leave me at any time, as long as they know I'm trying to help them be their best own coach themselves, that's important. But I think really to come back to your main, very good question there, Evan, I think, you know, we've got to get away from we are problem solvers all the time. And really we want to fix the problem before it happens by creating great processes within coaching practices, great processes for players, own approach to the game. Process is really, really important. It's almost, process is a word used all the time. It's become a cliche in psychology now, but sports psychology. But, you know, have great processes. In that way, there's less chance of some of the things happening to you that can tend to happen, slumps in forms, plateaus, all these things that may happen anyway, but you just reduce the possibility of those things.
Yeah.
So get started with this stuff.
Right. But I think, like slumps, bad form, it's inevitable. Mistakes, inevitable. They're always going to happen.
Yeah.
But staying on top of it, like you're talking about, helps minimize it and helps you bounce back from
Absolutely.
It quicker.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And helps minimize it, helps bounce back, and helps you manage yourself through plateaus and slumps of form,
yeah.
which is something I'm doing a lot with, you know, players at all levels, but absolutely helps you manage not just your mental health and your well-being, but also just manage your game, and helps you have better bad games, essentially.
That's
helps
true.
You have 6 out of 10s rather than 5 out of 10s, 7s rather than 6s. And that's so, so important.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Man.
Yeah.
You got my mind just like
for sure.
firing right now.
It's something I wish I had. Obviously, I'm glad that I'm learning more about this now as a coach, because I can obviously help people get farther than what I did, which is ultimately why I do it. But yeah, I wish I just focused on this a lot more when I was playing in college, or
Absolutely.
Even trying to go to the professional route, because it's just stuff that you don't even just like just dribble confidently and pass confidently. It's like just that just never really came across my mind. I was always just focused on connect this pass, beat that guy, get it on target. Yeah,
the end result rather
exactly.
than how to reach
yeah.
that end
yeah,
result.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
We need, in psychology, need to linguistically help coaches, help players focus on more of the specifics and controllable aspects, the granular mini details that actually drive KPIs and drive outcomes, the performance process, if you like.
Mm.
For sure.
I love it, man.
Perfect.
Cool. Hey, I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, like I said, my mind's firing. I feel like I could think of 1,000 questions as soon as we stop recording, and we could just keep on going, but I would love to have you on again sometime.
I'd be more than happy to come.
That'd be
perfect.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Dan.
Perfect.
Thanks, Dan.
Anything else you'd like to plug before we jump off?
No, you can catch me at danabrahams.com. My books are on there. My online academy is on there. My podcast is the Sports Psych Show. I have 3 Twitter accounts, but the main football one would be at danabrahams77. At danabrahamssoccer is Facebook, where I'm posting every single day. Post on LinkedIn as well, and I'm on Instagram at Dan Abrahams Sport. That's me.
There we go.
Love it.
Perfect.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Sounds good.
Thank you,
thanks,
guys.
Dan.